All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Transcendental qualities of Vitrasura. This is Vitrasura speaking to Indra, trying to get him to pick up his thunderbolt and fight. This is text 23. We're going to be looking at, if you look at the third line, the last two words, what does it say? Bhagavat Prasada. So that's what we're going to be looking at. Bhagavat Prasada, the mercy of. Chaivargikaya syag vikatam asmat. Patir vidate purushasya chakra. Tatonameyo bhagavat prasado. Tatonameyo bhagavat prasado.
Yes.
the three objectives, namely religiosity, economic development, and satisfaction of the senses. Ayasya, of endeavor. Vigatam, the ruin. Asmat, our. Pati, Lord. Vidite, performs. Purushasya, of a devotee. Chakra, O Indra. Tata, whereby. Anumeya, to be inferred. Bhagavat Prasadaha, the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yama, which, Durlabha, very difficult to attain. Akinchana Gotra, within the reach of the unalloyed devotees. Anyahai, by others who aspire for material happiness. Translation and report by Srila Prabhupada. Again, this is Vidrasara speaking to Indra, who's become discouraged. Indra had his thunderbolt, and he's down, and he's thinking, I'm not going to be successful, therefore, let me quit. And Vidrasara say, don't quit, keep on going. You'll get the results of what you desire. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Purport. There are four objectives in human life, namely... Come on, Yashal, give me the Sanskrit. Religiosity, dharma, economic development, artha, sense gratification, kama, and liberation, moksha, from the bondage of material existence. So what are the Brahmins mostly interested in? Of those four? Nope. What are the Brahmins mostly interested in? Moksha. What are the Kshatriyas mostly interested in?
Economic.
I find that the mode of passion is very much misunderstood. The mode of passion is a desire for honor. It's a desire to be honorable. So most of what we see in modern society is passion and ignorance mixed. It's either passion, ignorance, or just ignorance. So we mostly see Vaishyas and Shudras. We don't see very many real Kshatriyas. Kshatriya is willing to die for the sake of honor. Kshatriya will give up sense gratification and wealth for the sake of honor, for the sake of reputation. And they want to be famous. They don't want to be infamous. You know, an entertainer or a sports person, they don't mind being infamous as long as a lot of people know about them and they get a lot of money. They don't care what it's for. You know, they can be famous for being degraded. It doesn't matter to them. But someone in the mode of passion who's interested in dharma, they want to be famous as a righteous person, as a religious person. They want to be honest. They want to be fair. They want to have integrity. And they want people to notice them. They want the acclaim for it. They're not doing those things for their own sake. They're not doing those things because they're right. They're doing those things because that way they'll have status in society. So whereas the Brahmana is doing those things because it will help him to be free from entanglement in the material world. And who's mostly interested in artha? The Vaishyas. So the Brahmanas, they're willing to sacrifice even ordinary dharma or artha or kama to get moksha. And the Kshatriyas, they're willing to sacrifice moksha and artha and kama to get dharma. And the Vaishyas are willing to sacrifice moksha and dharma and kama to get artha. You find that business people will even sacrifice sense gratification, isn't it? To get more wealth. They're working 70, 80 hours a week. They don't even get to see their family. Have you met people like this? And what are you working so hard for? For your family. Do you ever get to see your family? Do you know their names? No, but I'm making so much money. Prabhupada talks about a family that he knew like this in India, where he said that the wife was telling him that her 3-year-old child one time saw the father and said, "Mommy, who's this man?" Because every morning he's leaving before the child wakes up and coming back after the child goes to sleep. So if the child's 3 years old, he doesn't even know his father. But, you know, I'm doing this for my child. We see this in the Persian Gulf. You see all these people who've gone there, left their families. They don't see their families for 4 years. Oh, but I'm sending them lots of, I'm making lots of money. For what? You're living in a labor camp, literally. They call them labor camps. So while you're making this money, you have no sense of gratification at all. You're not even seeing the people for whom you're working. You don't get to enjoy your wealth, just wealth, 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 wealth. So just like the Kshatriya wants honor for the sake of honor, and the Brahmana wants moksha, so the Vaishya wants artha. Vaishya's mixed passion and ignorance. It's passion. You want honor, but you're not necessarily willing to follow dharma to get it. And then the kama, of course, is desired by the shudras. So those of us who go out on book distribution, we find that shudras were likely to have money when they're paid and not the next day. Isn't it? If you get them on payday, then they've got, you know, $1,000 in their pocket, and they'll buy a book. And then on Monday, they have nothing. Because the shudra doesn't even care about wealth. The shudra doesn't care about liberation. The shudra doesn't care about religiousness. And they don't even care about accumulating wealth. All they care about is immediate gratification of their senses. So they'll even sacrifice their wealth for that purpose. So these are the four goals of human society. Of course, most people want some of all four. But whatever is the dominant one, whatever is the one for which one is willing to sacrifice the others, that's a good indication of one's varna. Varna means color. That's a good indication of what modes is influencing a person. Just like in ignorance, an animal is only interested in immediate sense gratification. Right? That's like shudra. They just let me avoid pain today and let me get pleasure today. You know, maybe it'll work for a week or a month or something, but not long term. People generally aspire for religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. So Prabhupada's saying here, people in general don't even desire moksha. Most people don't desire moksha. In fact, if you look at religious people in the world who talk about salvation, the Christians especially talk about salvation, the Buddhists also, but you'll find that the Christian idea of salvation is really just common. They're saying, I'll go to heaven, where I'll have lots of nice food, and you know, all my family will be there. So they're thinking about salvation in terms mostly of swarga, not in terms of the Brahman. And of course, the Buddhists do talk in terms of nirvana, but we haven't met very many Buddhists who are really aspiring towards moksha. Maybe your ex-husband, is he really working towards moksha? Yeah, so some. You find some. But generally, you find that the Buddhists or the Mayavadis, that they're engaged in sense gratification under the excuse that everything is spiritual, and then I'm God. Have you met people like this? Very spiritual persons who say that they want to become one with the universe, and they're engaged in so many sinful activities, saying, yes, yes, it's all one. I am God. Whatever I do, it's all spiritual. So those people are not really interested in moksha either. They're also interested in sense gratification. Actually, I have one relative of a relative of a relative like this, and he got initiated by some impersonalist in India, and he gives diksha, where he touches people's forehead and they faint in ecstasy. You've met people who've done that? When I preached in Trinidad, I was there for Janmashtami, and the devotees took me to preach at a program. And there's a lot of Hindus who've mixed their culture with voodoo in the Caribbean islands, so they mostly come from Bihar originally. So I went to this Janmashtami program, and they had these deities. They had a deity of baby Krishna, a strange deity, very odd-looking deity. And then they had deity of Durga, you know, and Shiva. And they're doing this strange voodoo dance. You know, they're dressed in saris and like that. And then this one lady in the saffron sari goes and touches people's heads, and then they go, ooh, they faint on the ground. It was really odd. And the devotees, they were saying, oh, Vitrasura, we're so sorry we brought you here. I said, no, this is interesting. It's like watching a National Geographic film. I can tell my students about it. But the point is that they're not really interested in moksha either, as such people. They may have some appearance of that. But really their interest is in sense gratification. So very few people are really interested in moksha. But a devotee has no other desire than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, both in this life and in the next. So the devotee has no interest even in moksha. The special mercy, now you might say, well, what use is all that? How is that mercy? Just unalloyed devotion. What kind of mercy is that? For a materialistic person, that doesn't seem like mercy, does it? You don't want sense gratification. You don't want wealth. You don't want honor and righteousness. You don't want freedom from material bondage. You want to come back birth after birth and just do service. Is this very attractive? Could you imagine if we advertised the Hare Krishna movement like that? Join the Hare Krishna movement to take birth after birth after birth as a servant without any personal desire of God. Would we get very many people joining? Probably not. Right? And you'll find that Srila Prabhupada in his lectures and also in his workbook will often talk about how this is the way to get liberation from material bondage. Have you noticed that? Prabhupada often talks about Krishna consciousness as a way to get liberation from material bondage. Or he often talks about if you have a Krishna conscious society, you'll have opulent grains and silks, and there'll be a peaceful society, and everybody will be happy. Right? And the Shastra, even Bhagavatam, is saying, you know, if you listen to this pastime, you'll get this desire and this desire and this desire. Because for most conditioned souls, this idea of Nandanam, Nandanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Jagadishakamani, Mama, Janani, Janani, Shrimad, Bhavata, Bhakti, Awaita, Kintwaye, is repulsive. And like when Prabhupada was preaching in London, no, it's a godbrother was preaching in London, and this Lord Jetland said, can I become a brahmana? And the godbrother said, certainly, you give up intoxication, illicit sex, meeting, and gambling. This is horrible. Impossible. That's my pleasure in life. Right? Or like that celebrity who came and stayed at the temple for a few days, and even just to give up red meat for him was a very, couldn't even imagine, you know, if he would only eat fish. And it seemed to him to be horrible to give up his girlfriends. And so generally we don't advertise, we don't usually go out to sell books and say, take this book and this is a way you can take birth after birth as a servant. Did anybody here advertise books like that? A devotee has no desire than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead both in this life and in the next. The special mercy for the unalloyed devotee is that the Lord saves him from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Now that's a very interesting sentence. I'm going to read it again and we're going to come back to this. The special mercy for the unalloyed devotee is that the Lord saves him from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Of course, if one wants such benefits, the Lord certainly awards them. Indra, for example, although a devotee, was not much interested in release from material bondage. Instead, he desired sense gratification and a high standard of material happiness on the heavenly planets. Vidrasura, however, being an unalloyed devotee, aspired only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord arranged for him to go back to Godhead after his bodily bondage was destroyed by Indra. Vidrasura requested Indra to release his thunderbolt against him as soon as possible, so that both he and Indra would benefit according to their proportionate advancement in devotional service. So this is also a very interesting sentence, that both of them would benefit according to their proportional advancement in devotional service. And this, of course, reminds us of what verse? In the Bhagavad Gita? Which English is? As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects.
O
O Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. So in the Hare Krishna movement, do we talk a lot about Krishna's mercy? I wonder how many times in a day, when we're talking to the other devotees, we say something about Krishna's mercy. Maybe we can count. How many times a day do I say something about Krishna's mercy, or think something about Krishna's mercy? And we think about Krishna's mercy when we get some nice facility, right? You're just thinking, boy, I'd really like an apple, and somebody hands you an apple, and you say, wow, that's really Krishna's mercy. Or you have some desire for the preaching. You know, you think, oh, I'd really like to start this preaching project. Maybe I've told you the story that there's a devotee at New Vrajdam in Hungary. And he was not so satisfied with the service he was doing at the farm. And he was thinking, I'd really like to preach more to the non-devotees. He had a whole plan. But he didn't know how he would do it. He didn't know how he'd get the people, and he didn't know how he'd get the money. So he wrote out a whole business plan. So any of you have ever done business and you have to go to a donor or you have to go to an investor? Any of you have any experience with that? You write out a business plan, right? Any of you ever done that? So you write out a business plan. This is what we hope to achieve. This is our goal. This is when we hope to achieve it. This is the personnel we'll have to employ. This is how much it's going to cost. This is the building we'll buy. You put out your goals and your needs and your costs. So he did all that. And guess who he gave his business plan to? The deities. And he would do service there. They have just a deity of Lord Chaitanya on the altar, Gaur-Nataraj. So he brought his, he would dress Gaur-Nataraj from time to time. It was on the schedule. So he took his business plan, and when he did his puja, he put it at the lotus feet of Gaur-Nataraj, and he said, you know, my dear company president, here is my plan to expand your mission. And if you approve of it, then this is the facility that I need to do it. I'm bringing this to you for your approval. And then he let it go. Now that's the way the devotees bring their desires to Krishna, either their desires for service or even their desires for their personal self, if they have any. And so maybe a week or two went by, and generally in Hungary there are people coming to the temple. There's a lot of tourists that come. They get, I think, 30,000 tourists a year at 5 euros a head. So anyway, some tourists came, and they were speaking to this devotee. And one of them developed a relationship with this devotee, and this devotee became sort of his informal mentor over time. So it's about 2 weeks after he gives this request, and he's mentoring this devotee maybe for a month or so, and at the end of some time, 1 or 2 months, the gentleman says, you know, I'm really grateful for all of the help and guidance you're giving me. I'd like to give a donation. How much should I give? And this devotee said, whatever you want, you can give. They have furans there. He said, you can give 1 furan or 1,000,000 furans, whatever you want. So the man says, okay, I'll think about it. So about a week later, he calls and he said, I've decided to choose the 1,000,000 furans. And that finances devotee's whole program. So we hear these stories and we say, oh, that's Krishna's mercy, right? Or Vindasuru Prabhu tells a very famous story. And we had a similar experience in Chicago, though not quite as dramatic. And he said the temple needed money to pay the rent. They needed $400 to pay the rent, and it was due the next day. And he was the treasurer. He went to the temple president and said, we need $400 tomorrow to pay the rent, and we don't have it. And the temple president said, well, go out on Sankirtan. So Sankirtan in those days meant you went out in dhotis and saris. They weren't even real dhotis and saris. They were just poly cotton saffron cloth, and we all wore saffron, men and ladies. And so they went out in their dhotis and saris, and we didn't sell books then. They were selling just Back to Godhead magazines for 25 cents a magazine. Now I think they're like $4. And so they go out and have a kirtan party. They go out and have a harinam party. And some of the people are going out selling Back to Godheads for a quarter or 50 cents, and they have a basket or sometimes even a big conch shell, and people are putting money in. So they went out on Sankirtan, and of course, you know, how much did they collect? Maybe $20 or $30 after so many hours. So they're getting in the van to go back to the temple, and as they're getting in the van, Rindasrupu sees across the street a very, very very tall man who was extraordinarily handsome. And he was looking here and there like he wasn't sure what he was looking for or where he was going. He looked a little lost. And then he sees the devotees getting into the van. He crosses the street and he hands Ravindra Prabhu an envelope that says for Krishna on it. And of course, it was exactly $400. So, as I said, we had a similar experience in Chicago where we had the town president had ordered paraphernalia for the deities, but it had been stuck in customs. They needed to pay, I think it was $680 to get it released from customs and pay all the bills and everything. We didn't have the money. And we'd been negotiating. And I used to help my husband in the treasury then. Later I became the treasurer. And we went again to the town president. We said, what are we going to do? He said, well, tomorrow they're going to send it back to India. We're going to lose all the crowns and jewelry. And he says, we need $680 by tomorrow. And where are we going to get it? Now, in those days, we were doing big books at O'Hare Airport. So we were definitely collecting more than just quarters. Anyway, we're out doing book distribution, and one of the ladies, Kalalalapa, came up to me and said, Aurelia, you're not going to believe what happened. I said, what happened? She said, I just tried to sell a book to a drunk sailor, and he just gave me $683. So, obviously, we see those things are Krishna's mercy. And we also talk about Krishna's mercy, of course, sometimes in terms of the difficult things that happen. So I have a very, very good friend who's doing a lot of doing the artwork for four of my books and who's going to be illustrating the activity books. She's done all the artwork in one of the temples in Fiji, if any of you have been there, all the Ramayana artwork. So she and her husband decided they were going to move to a farm. And they sold everything, they gave up their jobs, you know, they uprooted themselves, they moved to this farm, and they found out the farm was not properly managed. That, you know, none of the things they were promised came through. Has that ever happened to you? Somebody makes all sorts of promises, and you turn your life upside down, inside out, and do all these austerities, and you just count on the person, and then you get there, and it's all sand. So it was like that. There was nothing there. They didn't even ended up not even having a place to live. It turned out the place they were given to live was illegal, and the government came and said, sorry, you can't live here. So she said they were just living in their car. Anyway, so she wrote me this email. She said, so we had to leave and move into my parents' house temporarily, and we have no money, no job, and everything's falling apart. She said, but I really see that it's Krishna's mercy and it's part of our journey, and I'm very excited at what may lie ahead in our lives. So, of course, we don't always do that, but that's another example of things that we sometimes say, that's Krishna's mercy. Now, usually we see that as Krishna's mercy 5 or 10 years later. When you look at it and you say, oh, because that thing fell apart, I met such and such person, I ended up in this place, and then this thing happened, and it was a million times better than it would have been if that first plan succeeded. Of course, we see that with Prabhupada and Jhansi. That Srila Prabhupada's guru just told him, what was the order Prabhupada got from his guru? Preach in English to English-speaking people. That's all. And he said, write books. Very general order. So Prabhupada was preaching in English in India. He was writing in English. He was giving classes in English in India. And Prabhupada saw that the Gaudiya Math was fighting, and he decided that he would start the League of Devotees in Jhansi. So he was given the use of a big building. He made one disciple. He was doing a lot of preaching. And it seemed like everything was going. It seemed like it was Krishna's mercy. And then the governor's wife said that we want this building to train women in vocational arts. And because she was the governor's wife, Prabhupada saw there was nothing he could do. He tried. So apparently he lost his first real facility for preaching. And before that, I mean, Prabhupada really didn't have much of a preaching venue. But because Prabhupada lost the facility in Jhansi, he started thinking that really the people in India are not so receptive. They're trying to imitate the West. If I'm going to preach in English, I need to go to the West. And he was meditating how Bhaktisiddhanta sent a disciple to London. And he thought, you know, Guru Maharaj's desire is also to have centers in the West. And he thought, but now India is not, they're not no longer so much looking to Britain. They're now looking more to America. So instead of going to London, let me go to New York. So he shifted his plan. And I think all of us feel that the failure of the center in Jhansi is Krishna's mercy. Although at the time, it may not look like that. So we also use Krishna's mercy in that way. And another way we use Krishna's mercy is in regard to our own advancement. Right? It's very interesting in this verse also, in addition to saying Bhagavat Prasadam, there's the word ayasya, of endeavor. I was just reading where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana Goswami, you need, what is it? Agraha, ayasya agraha, I think is the way he says it. You need very enthusiastic endeavor. That attaining Krishna consciousness without enthusiastic endeavor, like Rupa Goswami says, utsaha, is impossible. You cannot do it. And yet at the same time we hear that attaining Krishna consciousness is due to Krishna's mercy. Right? And we talk about Krishna's mercy in that regard. You know, when am I going to get Krishna's mercy? So you have some people who just sort of sit around waiting for Krishna's mercy. I'm sure we've all met people like this. Or sometimes maybe we get like this. Oh, no, I'm not going to. Are you chanting? No, I'm just chanting in my mind and waiting for Krishna's mercy. You met these people. When Krishna gives me his mercy, then I will serve. And you find that there are many, many devotees who think like that. They think, well, I'm just attached to the material world. I can't do anything. I'm just waiting for Krishna's mercy. When is Krishna going to give me his mercy? And the way they approach Krishna consciousness is looking for that mercy. You know, let me find this particular devotee, or let me go to this sacred place, or let me do this particular thing, and then I'll get mercy, as if it's some sort of magic dust. You know, that they don't have to make an endeavor, it's just going to fall on them. But we do have this relationship between this enthusiastic endeavor, this ayasa, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says we have to do, and Krishna's mercy. What's the main story that illustrates this relationship? Between our endeavor and Krishna's mercy. Yes. When Mother Yasoda, we have her looking at Krishna's mouth there and seeing the universe. But when Mother Yasoda tied Krishna up, of course Krishna didn't want to be tied up. Wouldn't any child want to be tied up? Of course, in our modern Western society, we don't tie children up when they're bad, but we do something similar. We put them in like a playpen. They have, what they call them here? What do they call them here? You know, those little, they have sides on them. And the child goes in there and you give them some toys. And that way they play and they don't, you know, overturn the trash bin. Or whatever rasping zone they were getting into. Right? They have some little playpen. When I used to run a preschool, I started, I worked in a preschool before that, but I started running my own preschool when my youngest son was 2 months old. And once he could crawl, it was impossible to run the preschool if he was crawling around, because the older children were doing things like painting, and he would just crawl into the paint, you know, and do hand paints all over the floor and things like that. So we had to put him in a little playpen where he could see everybody but not get into any kind of mischief. So it's a similar idea, that you're restricting the child to a particular area. Or we also nowadays use baby gates. Have you seen that, where you want to keep the child in or out of a particular area, you're going to put a gate in the doorway. So in those days, they didn't have playpens or baby gates. And of course, they were mostly outside. It's a tropical country, and it's very, very much outside culture. So Mother Yasoda, instead, she wanted to tie Krishna up. But Krishna didn't want to be tied up. He wanted to play. He wanted to break the butter pot. You know? He wanted to distribute more butter to the monkeys. He wanted to get into mischief. He didn't want to be tied up. And so therefore, Mother Yasoda's tying and 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 tying. And she's getting the ropes from all over the village. And the other ladies are even laughing at her. Right? And Krishna's not getting tied up. And when does he finally agree to be tied up? things. First of all, she gets exasperated. She just says, I can't do it. I mean, how hard is it to tie up a little child? And the acharyas mentioned, Krishna Chakravartikar mentions that Krishna had a belt on, with bells. You could measure that. How come you can't tie him up? But she gave up. She surrendered. Says, I can't do it. I can't do it. I give up. And also she stopped being angry and she started laughing. So at that point, Krishna says, okay. Now that you've given up. He often does that, doesn't he? That when we give up, then he says, okay. And we can tell many, 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 many stories like this. So then Krishna gave his mercy, said, all right, you can bind me. And we find this in Maslila. The gopis go, Krishna disappears. The gopis are looking for Krishna. They're looking and looking and looking. And finally, they decide, you know, if we keep going, Krishna's going to keep going too. And it's dark, and he never wears any shoes in the forest, and he might hurt his feet on the path, so we're not going to go looking for him anymore. We give up. We'll just stay where we are. And what did they do? They sang songs. They sang about Krishna's pastimes, meditated on Krishna. They surrendered. They said, okay, Lord, whatever you want to come, you can come. But they were making that endeavor. Or one story I like to tell is of Bhima. So, we'll go a little bit backward. So first you have this messenger comes to see Krishna and Dwarka and says, Jarasandha has imprisoned all these kings. He's imprisoning them so that he can gain power. And they're in a horrible condition. Please save them. So Uddhava suggests, then Narada comes and says, Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to do the Rajasuya Yajna. Uddhava says, well, tell you what, Krishna, why don't we do the Rajasuya Yajna? And as part of that, we'll have to defeat Jarasandha and we can free all these kings. So very good idea. So Krishna tells the messenger, okay, we will kill Jarasandha and free you. Don't worry. Go back and give them the good news. Then everybody goes to Indraprasth. I mean, and everybody, we're talking 16,108 queens with 10 children each, and all of their tutors and all of their washer people and all of everybody. So it was a really big everybody, you know, plus it wasn't just Krishna's immediate family. You know, we talk about immediate family, we're talking about maybe 10 people, you know, 5 to 10 people, but you're talking about millions of people. So it took them a little while to get to Indraprasth. You know, it wasn't like they just got there one day. It probably took them 2 or 3 months. And then they're there for a while. They're talking about the Rajasuya Yajna. And then for 1 year, 4 of the Pandava brothers go in each direction and ask the kings if they'll cooperate. Meanwhile, these kings are just waiting, right, for Krishna's mercy. Anyway, then they come back and they say, everybody has surrendered and paid the tax except Jarasandha. So then Krishna says, all right, what we're going to do is Arjuna, Bhima, and I are going to dress like brahmanas and go see Jarasandha. It's Krishna's plan. Okay? It's Krishna's plan. And we'll get Bhima to fight with him. So they go there, and they say, Bhiksha, give us alms. And Jarasandha says, sure, whatever you want. Krishna also butters him up a lot. He talks about how, about Maharaj Shivi and Harishchandra and all these people, all these, because remember the Kshatriyas are interested in? Honor. He said, if you give in charity, you'll become very honorable. So, yes, I'll become honorable. You'll be praised after death. Why is that interesting, by the way, to be praised after death? Oh, why people are so interested in that? They're a rather strange kind of desire. You know, you're not around to see it anymore. What benefit do you get from that? It's a really odd desire that the conditioned soul has to be honored after death. It's sort of a perverted way of looking for immortality. Anyway, so he says, you know, you'll be praised after your death. Wow, that sounds really enticing. And then he says, okay, what do you want? And they say, well, Jarasandha could see they didn't look like brahmanas, they didn't act like brahmanas. First of all, they were very commanding. You ever been around people who are in a position of authority? And they have this sort of mood of authority, of commanding? You know, I'm working on an email conference. We're working towards a particular goal. And there's one member who keeps, like, taking over the conference. So I'm thinking, you know, when a person's used to being in a position of authority, they sort of tend to do that. So that they have these commanding voices, you know, and they have these marks from the bowstring on their shoulders, and they just didn't look really like brahmanas. They don't look like brahmanas, but okay. And they said, we want to duel with you. And he said, oh, Krishna, he's a coward. He ran away from me already. Forget him. Because Kshatriyas, remember, they want honor. There's no honor in defeating somebody who's weaker than you. They're not bullies. There's only honor if you defeat somebody who's equal or stronger than you. If you defeat someone who's stronger than you, that's really honor. And he said, Arjuna, he's younger. He's not a good match, but Bhima, he's a good match. So they're fighting, and they're fighting, and they're fighting, and they're fighting, and at night they would be friends. Now, this is Krishna's order to fight. And Krishna's standing there watching. And how long does the fight go on for? 28 days. Somehow it seems to be a lunar month, 28, 29 days. Seems to be a fight duration time. That's how long Shalva fought before Krishna showed up. That's how long Jambavan fought with Krishna also. Okay, so fighting for 28 days. And so during that time, is Bhishma making an endeavor? Is he making an ayasa? Is he making an endeavor? To what extent is he endeavoring? How much is he putting into this? How hard is he trying?
100%.
He's putting in 100%. He's not just saying, yeah, I'm going to try a little bit. Yeah, sure. Krishna will just do everything. He's trying 100%. And he is failing. Just like Mother Yasoda was also failing. And he also became exasperated. And he went to Krishna and he said, Na shaktoham jarasandam nirjetam yudhimadava. Na shaktoham. I don't have the shakti. Jarasandam nirjetam yudhi. Nirjetam. Jeta's like jaya. I can't be victorious yudhi in battle. I can't do it. I don't have the energy. And then it said, Krishna abhyayam swajitajasa. He infused Bhima with his own power, and what else did he do? What else did Krishna do? He infused Bhima with his own power in him? He gave an insider's tip. Now, Krishna likes to do this subtly. That's very pleasurable. You know, when you have a really good friend where you don't just say outright, you sort of hint at things and they just get it, isn't that fun? You know, you're really, really close to someone and you can just sort of finish each other's sentences, or you just look a certain way and they understand what you're talking about. It's very enjoyable. It's a real sense of connection with someone. So Krishna loves to do that. He's often talking to his devotees just, you know, with a little movement of his eyebrows or his eyes or some little hint like that. And when they get it, he enjoys and they enjoy it. So Krishna takes up just a blade of grass and he just splits it in two. Doesn't say a word. And Bhima goes, okay, I get it. You know, and he just takes Jarasandha and pulls him apart by his legs. And there were two halves of a body. And then he does it like that. So that's Krishna's mercy. And there you see, these are some examples. We could give many, 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 many more. When we talk next Saturday about stealing of the children of the Dwarka Brahmana, they will also tell a story about Arjuna making an endeavor and Krishna's mercy. So this is true whether you want to endeavor for anything. If you want to endeavor for money, you have to work and you depend on Krishna's mercy, isn't it? Even if you're not a devotee at all, it's like that. You do your work and still it depends on the will of God and the will of the devas. It's not entirely in your hands. Otherwise, everyone who works hard would be rich. Which, of course, is obviously not the fact. But that's true even for material things. And that's also true for spiritual things. That ultimately it's Krishna's mercy, but one has to do the work. One has to make the effort. And one has to make what kind of effort? To what extent? 100%. Just exactly like Bhima, exactly like Mother Yasoda. Mother Yasoda did 100%. She didn't take just one rope. She got all the ropes in her house, and when that wasn't sufficient, she went to the whole neighborhood. She didn't say, well, I tried, I give up now, Krishna, it's up to you, it's your mercy. Right? He tried everything to her maximum capability, and only after doing her maximum capability, she went, "You know, Lord, I can't do this. It's up to you." So here we also would think about a really nice purport in the Bhagavad Gita to 15:15. Sarvasya chamrati sannivistam atasmati yuganam apohanam chabedishta sarvamaham eva vedyo vedantika veda veda eva chaham. Prabhupada says that the Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is a supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas. So a supplier and digester of foodstuff, in other words, he gives our sense gratification, witness of all our activity, he gives us the desires we want, and he gives the Vedas, he also gives us the means to get out. He is worshipped by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. God is all merciful. So that means that everything that is happening to us is a combination of our desires and Krishna's mercy. As we were saying here, that both he and Indra would benefit according to their proportionate advancement in devotional service. So Krishna's fulfilling all desires. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kama. We cannot fulfill our desires independently. We can only fulfill our desires by Krishna's mercy. So by my desire, by my endeavor, Krishna is fulfilling. Whatever I have now is due to the mercy of Krishna, whatever it may be. Whatever intelligence I have, whatever health I have, whatever nice family relationships I have, whatever living facility I have, whatever nice food I get to eat. Yesterday, Kaylee Chanchala brought me all this cheesecake. Incredible. I've never had a cheesecake like that before. That's also Krishna's mercy. And whatever we don't have. Right? If all you get is, you know, some super spicy, overcooked chili pakora. That's also Krishna's mercy. So whatever we're getting is Krishna is giving that according to our degree of surrender and according to our desires. Whatever I have now is according, is I have by two things. What endeavor I've made, what my desires are, and the mercy of Krishna. So in order to get the real mercy, one has to change one's desires, and then one has to endeavor. So he fulfills all desires. Prabhupada says here, if you want material benefits, you can have that also. And I'm sure we've all done that. I'm sure we've all been on the heavenly planets. Probably more than one time. I'm sure Krishna has fulfilled those desires of ours. But then Prabhupada says here, the Lord saves an unalloyed devotee from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. What does that mean? The special mercy for the unalloyed devotee is that the devotee saves him, the Lord saves him from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. What do you think that means? What's Prabhupada saying here?
Just by doing his devotional service to Krishna, he automatically gets the results that other people are getting through doing their activities.
From yoga kshema vadamyaham, and Krishna also says this to Arjuna, that better than fruitive activity or jnana is yogi, is yoga, therefore being a yogi. So if you do devotional service, you'll automatically get all those things without having to endeavor for them. You don't have to make a separate endeavor for them. Alright, what else is this one? So you labor hard for devotional service, but you don't have to labor hard for those things. Yes. Okay, so it seems what you're saying is that the devotee understands, by the Lord's mercy, the devotee understands what's worth laboring for? Is that your point? That instead of, so the Lord saves him by giving him the realization that if you're going to labor hard for bhakti rather than laboring hard for these things. Is that your point? Or you want to explain it another way? Okay, so at the end of the day, after doing all the hard work, they'll get something worthwhile rather than something cheap. So he saves them from the hard labor for something useless. Okay, other ideas about what Prabhupada means here?
Sure.
The special mercy for the unalloyed devotee is that the Lord saves him from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Yes? Surrender to me. So Prabhupada's point here is if you just surrender to Krishna, he'll take care of it. You don't have to worry. Master John, you don't have to worry about all this. Okay? Other ideas about what this is saying? Krishna's giving the devotee intelligence to connect religion, economic development, and sense gratification with service, right? And therefore, the devotee is not engaged in some hard endeavor for those things. Is that what you're saying? So it may be externally hard endeavor, but it's not really for those things, it's for Krishna's pleasure. Although externally it may look like it's for those things. That reminds us of when we were doing the Nectar of Instruction seminar, and we were talking about over-endeavor for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. And we were referring to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Bhakti Loka. And he said, to engage in devotional service is not within the category of hard endeavor. Although you have to work very hard with enthusiasm, it's not the same thing. So that means, I think the point you're saying is that even if the devotee is apparently doing that, devotee is going to a job or running a business or doing something to get economic development, or the devotee is cooking a nice cheesecake, or the devotee is, you know, trying to be a person of forgiveness and integrity, you know, dharma, artha, and kama, that it is not the same hard endeavor. So then we're looking at a difference in quality between the work of a materialistic person, or even a materialistic devotee, because this is the difference between the materialistic devotee and the unalloyed devotee in their endeavor. What is that difference in quality? Is they're trying to please Krishna, which is quite a different thing. Now, people try to imitate this in the world. A person works hard to please his wife. You know, his idea of working hard is so he can buy the wife a diamond bracelet and bring it home, and she goes, and he's working for that. Right? And therefore he doesn't feel that it's hard endeavor. Right? Or the wife is making the cheesecake, so the husband comes home after the hard day of work and goes, wow, what a wife. So there's an imitation of that in this world. Of course, when you try to please another conditioned jiva, it's often very frustrating because, number one, you can't always please them, no matter how much you endeavor. And number two, even if you can fully please them, their pleasure doesn't fully satisfy you. So that's a frustrating way to go about that. But the devotee is doing everything like that. The devotee is thinking, you know, if I make this money, Krishna will go, wow. If I make this cheesecake, Krishna will go, wow, what a nice servant I have. Like Krishna's sitting with his cowherd boyfriends, and they're saying, hey, Krishna, taste this samosa. I was just reading this little sneak preview from next Saturday, that sometimes the cowherd boys empty out the contents of their samosa and put jasmine flowers in it instead. And then when another boy or Krishna tastes it, they go, and then they start chasing the boy who put in the jasmine flowers. But that's why we're doing all of our activities. And not thinking about our own pleasure, right? The man who's out there slaving and secretly saving up to buy his wife this surprise diamond bracelet, he's doing it for her pleasure. The woman who's in the kitchen, you know, 5-6 hours, and she's thinking, I'm going to make a special cheesecake, a kind I've never made before. She's thinking of how happy will my husband be, or how happy will the children be, or how whatever. You know, how happy will my employer be? Right? So a little idea of this sort of mentality, and you forget about yourself. Isn't it? When you're working for someone else's happiness, you completely forget about yourself. It may be, you know, blazing summer, which never is blazing summer here. You may be in a place where it's blazing summer and, you know, you're by the stove and you're sweating and sweating. Remember Gita Nagari, I used to make about 200 chapatis. And we were cooking, because there were all these guys working out in the field all day, you know, with the oxen, and they were hungry. And I'd be cooking 10 at once. I'd have 10 fires going at once. You know, and in the summer, it was hot. As one of my former students, who's now at the 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan, as he said a month ago, you know, it was the hot season. He said, in the hot season in Vrindavan, sweat has a whole new meaning. So it was like that in the kitchen, you know, you were covered. It was as if somebody took a bucket and threw it over you. You were just completely drenched. You could hardly walk because you were just covered with sweat. But you really don't notice it. You notice it after you're cooking. But while you're cooking, you know, you're so absorbed. You know, we're playing some tape of Prabhupada giving a lecture, and you just got the rhythm of, you know, got somebody else knowing the japatis. You know, got kind of this little japati dance that you're doing. You're not thinking about your own austerity. You're just thinking, wow, at that time we were cooking for Gaudiya Thai. It's before Radhananda came. You're just thinking, you know, for the pleasure of the deities, the pleasure of the devotees, how am I going to please them? So it doesn't feel like endeavor. And as Sri Prabhupada quotes in his happiness seminar, he quotes the researcher, Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, that that's called flow, where you feel that your work and play are the same, that there's no difference. So this is the way that the devotee really achieves Krishna's mercy. Krishna gives all sorts of levels of mercy. He may give you the level of mercy to become Indra, the level of mercy. But the way that is to see, first of all, to see everything as Krishna's mercy. And the most wonderful purport in this regard is Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's purport, Dibrahma Samhita, I believe it's text 61, which I really recommend to you to study and make it one of your own guiding principles in life. He says, how is it that someone goes from the stage of having material desires? Now, perhaps there's some of us here who don't struggle with material desires, but I was just talking to one town president in a distant land last night, and he said, one of my board members accused me of having mixed motives, but I think my desires for being here are pure. And I said, well, Prabhu, according to the Bhagavatam, if your desires are pure, your heart will always be melting in ecstasy 24 hours a day. And if it's not, if as soon as you chant the holy name, tears don't come to your eyes and your heart doesn't melt in ecstasy, you have some impure motives. Must. So we may think, yes, I have all pure motives. Right? But if we don't have the symptoms of pure motives, then we can understand that we still have material desires. But at least most of us have the intelligence that we don't really want them to be fulfilled. We sort of want them and don't want them. We don't really, really want to go to the heavenly planets. Just take birth after birth after birth in this world to try to get money and prestige and sense gratification. I don't think any of us are really fully attracted to that. And yet we still have those urgings within the heart, isn't it? It's almost like we're divided. Person, Arjuna asked this question. He said, why do I seem to be forced to violate Dharma, even though it seems like it's almost against my will? And Krishna says, it's for the lust of the heart. So how do we get from this point where those things are still in the heart to coming to the ultimate platform of purity? And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says that exactly these things that we've just talked about with the sentence, he said, first of all, dedicate everything to Krishna. Dedicate even your Dharma, Artha, Karma to Krishna. Dedicated to Krishna. Do it in yajna. Yajnartart kamano natra loka yam karma bandhanam taratam karma. What's it done? The Samadhas Lanchana. Third chapter. Work then is a sacrifice your Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage to this material world. Therefore, Samadhi, do all your duties for his satisfaction. That way you always remain free from bondage. So do everything as a sacrifice, at least externally, and try to start doing it internally. Try to think of what would make Krishna happy. Would Krishna like his turban on this way? What kind of flute would he like to have today? Did I ever tell you about the pujari I met once who had a dream like that? Did I ever tell you about that pujari? On my travels, I met this one pujari. Not in this country, but not too far from here. And she told me that she had this dream where the deity was talking to her in the pujari room. and say, let's open all these drawers. And he was opening all the drawers and all the closets and saying, this is my favorite turban. And I really like this turban. And I really like it when you dress me with this turban, with this outfit. And, you know, but when you put on this particular thing, this that I really don't, I really would like to be dressed. So they were having this whole conversation. Then in her dream, another devotee starts walking in, and the deity quickly runs out of the puja room and jumps back on the altar and assumes his pose and winks at it. So anyway, dreams are dreams. But the point is that one should have the mentality that I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm trying to dress Krishna in a way that he likes. I'm trying to cook for Krishna in a way that he likes. I'm trying to clean the temple in a way that he likes. So that, you know, I'll be cleaning and Krishna will go, oh, wow, that's really clean. And trying to mow the lawn and plant the cauliflowers and distribute the books and even change the baby's nappies and whatever I'm doing it so Krishna will look and say, wow, that's really nice. To do everything for Krishna's pleasure, exactly the same way that an ordinary person does everything to please his wife or to please the husband or to please the children or to please the parents or to please the employer or to please the country. Exactly the same. The Prabhupada says we all have this ashakti. We're just putting it in the wrong place. And then to take two parts. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, both of which are totally relevant to this purport. First thing is to do everything as a sacrifice to Krishna. And to work hard, with enthusiasm. As hard as anybody works out there in the world, if not harder. People are working so hard out there in the world. You know, getting a degree is hard work. Running a business is hard work. Keeping all the family members happy and not, you know, killing each other. It's hard work. It's a lot of endeavor. Yeah. At least we should work that hard. People used to ask me, you know, how do you do all these things when I was running the school, taking care of my family? I said, you know, in America, there's 24 million women who go to work. They have children, they have families, and they work a full-time job. Why can't I do some service for Krishna? I can't be as dedicated as they can be. And then the next thing is to see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, to see everything as the prasad of the Lord. Everything. That means whatever sense gratification I get. Does Krishna give us all some sense gratification? Does anyone here have zero sense gratification? Zero sense gratification would mean, like here, sometimes the devotees say, Krishna's taking everything away. It reminded me of a story a friend of mine gave me. We had in our Gurukul library of this man in the Vietnam War who was captured by the North Vietnamese and put in a prisoner of war camp. He was put in solitary confinement for 7 years. And if he communicated with another prisoner, he'd be beaten. Of course, they found ways of doing it. They, you know, have some sort of code. But it might take 24 hours to communicate one sentence by code through the camp. And if you were caught, you'd be beaten. And sometimes they would try to, you know, put thicker walls in the prison and things to keep them from communicating. So no association with another human being. And he would lie just on a concrete bed, no blanket. And if they wanted to interrogate him or if they caught him communicating, they would chain him to the concrete bed, sometimes for a month or two at a time. So he'd just have to do his toilet business right there in his bed and eat there with his mouth, with his hands chained up. And imagine that it wasn't exactly very good for his health. And the food that they gave him was hardly even edible by a pig, but to speak of by a human being. He said they would get parasites, and they would, when they went out in the yard, they'd look for places where kerosene had spilled, and they would take some of it to kill the parasites. Now that's Krishna taking everything away. And that's no sense gratification. That's literally no sense gratification. So I don't think any of us have a circumstance like that. We all have some sense gratification. We have some clothing. We have some nice food to eat. We have some friends. We have some days of beautiful weather, like maybe today will be, see? Often. Is that a friend in London who's thinking about moving here? And he said, I said, well, it rains here as much as London. He said, but you get any sun? So we all have some sense of gratification. We take that as Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada said, just like an employer gives the servant something for their own enjoyment. Any of you have ever been around servants? You give them a place to live. You don't make your servant live down the street. They may not live in as nice a room as you live in, but you give them a room, and they eat the same food. Right? The servant cooks for the master, and the master's food. The servant gets to eat the same food. Not at the master's table, which is why we meet in front of the demon. So Krishna's giving us so many things, even just for our sense gratification. We take that this is Krishna's mercy, this is his gift, this is his kindness. Not that I take it, oh, now I have something for my sense gratification, but that it deepens our love for how kind Krishna is. My service is so insignificant, my service is so ill-motivated, I have so many material desires, I offend so many people, and still Krishna gives me cheesecake. How do I deserve cheesecake? I'm a prisoner. I'm an offender. I deserve only, you know, cabbage soup without salt. And he's giving me cheesecake and samosas and gulab jamuns and halwa and puris. Who eats better than the devotees of Hare Krishna? So when we're eating, we think, wow, this is really Krishna's mercy. When we see the clothes we have to wear, this is Krishna's mercy, the house we have. The devotees we get to associate with. Everything that we have in our life, we see this is Krishna's mercy. And we also see the service we're given is Krishna's mercy. Wow, Krishna lets me do some service. Even when that service materially is frustrating, somehow your file gets erased and you have to create it all over again. Wow, Krishna's so kind, he gave me some service to do. This is Krishna's mercy. Or you have to deal with a very difficult person. Wow, Krishna's teaching me tolerance and humility and forgiveness. How kind he is. He's purifying my heart. This is Krishna's mercy. You see everything. Wow, this person betrayed me and I have to sleep in my car. Wow, this really helps me to depend on Krishna and see that he's always taking care of me. This is Krishna's mercy. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, if one does those two things, if one dedicates everything to Krishna and sees everything that comes to one as Krishna's mercy, the so-called good and the so-called bad. Sometimes devotees do one or the other. They only see the good things as Krishna's mercy and the bad things they say, how can Krishna be good? We have devotees the other way. They hate the nice things Krishna gives me. No, I'm not going to enjoy this prasadam. It's Maya. Austerity is Krishna's mercy. See, these two extremes. Poor Krishna, you know. Could you imagine you give somebody a present and they go, why are you doing this? I don't want your present. So to see everything is Krishna's mercy. Then one comes to the point of being an unalloyed devotee. And one comes to the point of being an unalloyed devotee, one starts to understand what is Krishna's ultimate mercy. We can start seeing Krishna's mercy even in a materially contaminated vision. Oh, this thing I got for my sense gratification is Krishna's mercy. But ultimately, one comes to the point of saying Krishna's ultimate mercy is that I get to have a relationship with him. That's really mercy. And if I can achieve that mercy, how interesting, Vritrasura. He's achieving that mercy through taking the role of a demon and leading the demon soldiers to fight against Indra and being killed on the battlefield. Whoa. The Pandavas achieved that by being humiliated by their arch enemies in a public arena in the gambling match. But if this brings me closer to Krishna, that is mercy. So one comes to that point, that the ultimate mercy is reestablishing my relationship with Krishna. And one comes to see that all these things, the so-called good, the so-called bad, are all Krishna's means of just tightening that relationship of love, which is what brings us the satisfaction of everything we're looking for. Everything I'm looking for through sense gratification. What am I looking for through sense gratification? Pleasure, fun, excitement. That's there in my relationship with Krishna. Everything I'm looking for through wealth, security, pleasure, power, freedom, as their mission. Everything I'm looking for through religiousness, a sense of integrity, of authenticity, of meaning, that's their in Krishna. And everything, even in moksha, freedom is there in Krishna. Therefore, the devotees see that the ultimate mercy is not to look for those things in an inferior way, but to find those things with Krishna. So thank you. Somehow I'm hoping you can switch the clock. Otherwise, I have to keep looking at my watch. And looking at your watch is a... the body language of looking at your watch means I don't want to talk to you anymore. I have more important things to do than to be here. It's a disrespectful thing. So when you force a speaker to always look at their watch, it's awkward. You're communicating to your audience that you don't respect them, so you know, kind of try to summon them. And that go over time. If we're only going to have one working clock, it would be nice to have it. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Chastisements, yes, please.
If we don't make this endeavor, according to our capacity, if we don't make this endeavor, should we still expect that what we receive is Krishna's mercy? And an example, we don't get proper rest, and we still go and drive the car and we have an accident and kill someone, or
when
say that was Krishna's mercy because we didn't really use our God-given intelligence and guide us and make the best endeavor.
Well, basically, anybody who's not fully Krishna conscious, what's happening to them is the result both of their own nonsense and of Krishna's working. So I know Prabhupada was very angry when devotees would do foolish things and would say, well, it's Krishna's mercy. He'd say, no, that's your foolishness. At the same time, we can still find that our realizations from that are Krishna's mercy. So if I do something foolish and suffer, but through that suffering I come to understand some things, then certainly that is Krishna's mercy. The suffering and enjoyment we get in this world is ultimately due to our responsibility. But still, if we see Krishna's connection with that, we're far better off than if we don't. That somehow Krishna is so... It's something like, if you do something wrong, let's say your child does something wrong and you punish the child. So their punishment is not... It's not the way you would prefer to show the mercy. It's not your preference. You're not waking up in the morning thinking, I'd really like to punish my child, unless you're really warped. I mean, who wakes up thinking like that? But still, you're punishing them as well. So the child could interpret that punishment saying, this punishment is 100% my responsibility, the child would think, which is true. And they could also say, this punishment is the kindness of my father, which is also true. It's both true. So you don't want to say it's Krishna's mercy in the sense that you don't take responsibility. I think we've talked about this before. Krishna's mercy doesn't mean that I have no responsibility. It's still Krishna's mercy.
You see, what it doesn't mean...
It doesn't mean you have no responsibility. You know, if the child doesn't think, oh, my father is just whimsically putting me in the corner. You know, my father's just a meanie. Of course, children often do think like that. They think, oh, my mean daddy is just, making me stay in my room for no reason. So it's not Krishna's mercy like that. It's Krishna's mercy in the sense that Krishna's using my foolishness to help bring me closer to him. He's trying to rectify my foolishness. Is that all right? This is a difficult... We're looking at attitude. An attitude of repentance, of responsibility, and also of gratitude. Both. But, I can't go around, cheating people and telling them, well, it's Krishna's mercy. Is that clear?
Yes.
I can't take, you know, a stick and hit you over the head and say, oh, Prabhu, you know, your bump on your head is Krishna's mercy. Now, you should think like that. You should think that, you know, Armila's hit me over the head with a stick due to some offenses that I've committed against somebody, and Krishna's very kindly rectifying my mentality and using her as an agent. But I should think I'm a rascal. And then whatever reaction I get for that, I should say, oh, Krishna's kind that he's giving me a reaction to rectify my mentality. Yes?
Even in good to great study on materially successful businesses, they found the same attitude. When something good happens, that they give the credit elsewhere. And when something bad happens, they take responsibility.
They take responsibility. But taking responsibility doesn't mean that you become guilt-ridden or depressed. It means you take responsibility, you rectify it. There's that story of Satsuka Maharaj with Srila Prabhupada. Satsuka Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary. And, you know, those were the before email days, those were the snail mail days, when you typed out letters on a typewriter. So Satsuka Maharaj was typing out the letter that Prabhupada dictated, and Prabhupada said in that letter, I've enclosed something. You know, I nowadays we have it as an email attachment, but then it was a physical piece of paper you put in the envelope. He said, I've included something. And then after it was mailed out, they got a reply back that he didn't get the thing that was supposed to be in the envelope. And Satsuka Maharaj went to Prabhupada and said, I forgot to include it. And Prabhupada started yelling at him. What kind of a useless servant are you? You're just a fool. And he's sitting there going, yes, you're right, I'm a fool, I'm a useless servant. And Prabhupada keeps yelling at him, and he keeps just saying, yeah, I'm just terrible, I'm just terrible. And finally he thinks, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to do something about this. I said, I know what I wish for, but he said, I'll write another letter from me saying that I'm the one who forgot to put in the attachment, and here it is. And then immediately Prabhupada was happy. And he said, yes, thank you very much. So taking responsibility doesn't mean you can do that for, you know, 10 seconds. Whoa, that was really dumb of me. That's fine. And then you go on and you rectify it. If you really feel responsible, you don't just sit around crying and beating yourself up. You do something. That okay? And you take even that. You take well, this is Krishna's mercy that even that Krishna's using my foolishness as a learning experience. Okay, so again, I want to invite you next Saturday from 7 a.m. to 7:30. We're going to be having, Krishna willing, a whole Leela and Kirtan day from Krishna book. So it should be very exciting. So. Please come, and I think we're going to have some heaters on in the room. That's the plan. Have some heaters, and there'll also be some prasadam. So please come, and please bring your friends. Thank you very much. Have a blessed day.